The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, does God care about the opinion of celebrities? Not particularly, my friend, not particularly, at least not when such commentary is glaringly uninformed. Now, I shouldn't say God doesn't care at all. Whenever falsehood is spoken instead of truth, he cares very much. But if you're asking whether God or any of us should give more credibility to somebody based on the songs they sing or the movies they perform in, no, we don't care, and I doubt very much that God cares. In that vein, Barbara Streisand says that if the GOP keeps Congress, hold on to your seats, if the GOP keeps Congress, Barbara Streisand might leave the country. Oh my God, say it isn't so. Actually, Babs, we're not buying it. You said the same thing 2 years ago. You said you would leave the country if Trump won. To my knowledge, nobody from Hollywood left, and there were many who made that promise. They're still here. If they had really left, Trump would have something extra to campaign on. But don't worry, Babs. None of us were buying it back when you first said this in 2016. I never assumed for a second that it would happen. By the way, I very much like Streisand as a singer and artist. As for her views of current events, sing, Babs, just sing. And now let me introduce a man whose reputation does not include singing, but rather astute political commentary. Say hello to National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
Hello, Bob.
Actually, even though we've been to church together for years, I don't think I've been next to you when, for all I know, you might sing.
I actually, Bob.
I know you don't think of yourself as a singer.
I do not think of myself as a singer.
You can probably carry a tune, though.
Right? It's marginal. Okay. So I won't be singing right now.
But that's not what's going to be carved on your tombstone when you die, that you were a singer.
No.
But you do have astute political commentary. We have an election coming up. Mike's joining us the Sunday before the election, and he'll be here next week to debrief after the election as well.
Yeah, well, Bob, so it made me laugh because, of course, every celebrity that promised to leave the country was going to Canada, to France, but nobody said they were going to Mexico. It's very interesting, you know, after they were complaining about Trump, you know, and his views on Mexico, but none of them said, I'm leaving Mexico.
And the other thing, speaking of Mexico and Guatemala, if we're really such a horrible, racist country, why is everybody trying to get over here?
Well, that's the a market-based analysis that since the liberals and the lefties don't understand the markets, they wouldn't understand your analysis there, Bob.
Yeah, we do confuse people with facts once in a while.
So anyway, I think obviously this is the last opportunity we have to take a look at what's going to be happening on Tuesday. And, you know, going into this analysis, you know, I am a conservative Republican, so I'm not, you know, the unbiased, the person that's claiming to be unbiased, but I do my best not to fill my mind with, you know, hopes that won't be realized.
You don't want falsehood.
You know, right. Rose-colored glasses, those sorts of things. So I have, you know, and of course, if you're just watching, even if you're watching Fox, but if you're, and especially the Fox News rather than the pundits, or you're watching CNN, or you're reading into the papers, I mean, basically, the analysis is that the Republicans are probably going to hold the Senate, though there's a chance they might, but they probably will. And for sure, the Republicans are going to lose the House.
That is the conventional
wisdom. 538, Nate Silver over there. That's one of the big gurus, sites out there, you know, gives the Republicans a 1 in 7 chance of holding the House. Crystal ball, Larry Sabato.
Well, he was dead wrong last time.
He was dead wrong, but he admitted it. He was very gracious.
Yes, he was very humble about it.
He's giving something like, 15 or 20% chance that Republicans hold the House. And Cook County, or the Cook Political Report, is also giving very high odds that the Democrats take the House. So these are like three of the biggest names. And these are the gurus. And I mean, these people are smart people. They have statisticians. They know their systems. I mean, at 538, they've got a three-tiered model that takes in client, statistical analysis. It adds in qualitative factors, all these things here. So, if you look at that, in fact, the odds do seem stacked against the Republicans. And so let's talk about that for a bit here.
I was going to say, I don't remember the name of the poll, but one of the very, very, very few polls that did call it for Trump in 2016, they are saying there's a very good chance we will keep the House. I forget the name of the poll.
Well, Rasmussen.
Rasmussen was one of them. I'm thinking even of a different one because they looked at very different data and they acknowledged pretty openly that a lot of times people are just afraid to tell anybody they like Trump. But when they get into the voting booth and they can look both ways and nobody's watching, it's a different story.
And let's just take a look at why conventional wisdom would say we're going to lose the House as Republicans. Okay, first of all, we have 40 open seats. That means those 40 seats don't have incumbents sitting in them. That's bad.
And didn't a lot of those incumbents retire because they thought Trump was going to screw things up and they just didn't want to hang around?
They thought it was going to be a rough 2 years.
Yeah.
If they'd stuck around a little bit longer,
they didn't want to hang around.
They might have changed their mind if they stuck around. But that's, look, most of them are that. Some of them just, getting old and retiring. Some of them, moving up to a higher office. But 40. And I think that the Democrats maybe have 20 or something open seats.
Well, and of course, Ron DeSantis is running for governor.
Right.
That's why his seat's
exactly. Open. So, okay, so there. Then you have a long history of, when the party takes the presidency in the next midterm, it always loses seats. Always.
Not always. There have been times.
Losing
seats, but not, they don't always lose control.
Not necessarily, because they would have to be a lot of seats, but, President George W. Bush after 9/11 with that tremendous, huge burst of popularity that faded. But at that time, the Republicans actually picked up a few seats. So on average.
But then in 2006.
The party that has the presidency loses 27 seats.
Yeah.
Since we only can lose 23 and still hold the House, the average doesn't look good. But it gets even worse, Bob. If a presidential approval rating is below 50%, the party loses on average 37 seats.
Well, his approval rating's gone up to just about 50%.
Well, it's
depending on the poll you look at.
The Rasmussen had him over 50% a couple days ago. Now he's running about 49%.
But he's running higher than that in some of these states where he's going out and campaigning and really trying to push.
Part of what we're talking about, but we're talking about broad factors. We're talking about wave factors that if you get a very popular president or a very, very unpopular president, you can create macro effects that affect every race, even, that sweep across. I don't believe we're at that point. But my point is if just looking at the macro before we get down to state by state, because you're right, is that, you could almost say business as usual would be with a president pulling under 50%, which Trump is on the average, is 44% now in RCP pool, Republican politics, you'll lose 37 seats. Then we have another factor that I have to admit that doesn't make me happy is the Democrats' small donors have been roaring in the last month or so. I mean, just
a
lot.
Hillary far outspent him last time too, so that doesn't always make a difference.
But it's not just the money; it's the idea that you've got these small donors, $100 checks, $200 checks, that shows enthusiasm.
Oh, I see.
So that's
when
not
you
a
track
good,
it from that.
I mean,
point
I can't.
Of view. Yes,
I mean, it's hard for me to chain that around to say that's a positive for Republicans. And then you take a look at the performance. Even though the Republicans won 8 out of the 9 special elections, congressional level, is every single race we won, we apparently lost because we didn't perform as well as Trump did in the district. Right? Remember that? Every time we'd win,
that's the way people would spin it. But yes, they were close. We would have wanted.
So there's no doubt, though, that the Democrats overperformed in those districts relative to what they had done in the past. So, but they were special elections, so you can take that for what that's worth. A Gallup poll that just came about 3 days ago said that more voters are voting to send a message in opposition to President Trump than voters are voting to send a message of support. That's a nationwide phenomenon.
Right. Again, I'm only cautiously optimistic, mm-hmm. but I am very skeptical of these polls.
Okay, right, of course. And then we have, definitely have seen signs how widespread it is, we could question, but we've definitely seen an energized, angry left out there, and they are energized, and that's part of the reason we're seeing seeing lots of small donors. But is it as widespread as the media has been creating? That's the question.
Right.
Because you focus in at 100 people, and every news organization covers that, 100 people protesting out in D.C. Meanwhile, you have a Trump rally in Montana
with
that's
like
got 15,000,
or 10,000,
or 100,000, so that it RSVP'd. So we have to take a look at that. So I'm just saying,
and there's a lot of angry enthusiasm on the right also.
So, heading into these midterms, there is a lot of factors that if you wanted to, you could interpret to say, hey, are really good for the Democrats. There's no doubt about that. And the mindset, and I believe that the mindset in the beltway, in the elites, the people who do that, is that there was a blue wave coming. Now, maybe the blue wave is moderated a bit, but they still, in their mind, cannot get past the idea that this is a plus Democrat election.
Well, and even if it's not a blue wave, even if the Democrats just barely took back the House, that would be horrific for them to even just barely take it back. We don't want them to take it back.
We don't want to take it back, but let's
that makes Nancy Pelosi our Speaker of the House again.
Now we'll get to there. So let's, before we talk about, holding the House or losing the House, let's just talk about the Senate. Okay. Historically speaking, the party with the presidency loses 3.8 Senate seats. Loses 3.8 Senate seats. We are now talking about picking up 2 to 4. So if we just stayed even, we'd be beating the trend. If we pick up 2 to 4, we're really, really beating the trend. And that's a huge plus. So let's not just count that. That's huge. And, people tell us, it's because that Trump happened to win in the states, that we were coming up for election this time, and that made it tough for them. That's true. But the bottom line is if we pick up 2 seats in the Senate, relative to the average, that's a swing of about almost 6 seats from what the average is. Minus 3.8 plus 2, that gives us a swing of almost 6 seats. So that's significant. So let's not just blow that off. The fact that everybody is favoring us to hold the Senate means that there's no way that this can be called a blue wave election. A blue wave election is when you lose both seats in the House and the Senate. So it's not a blue wave already. Now let's go ahead and talk about the House. I don't want to lose the House because the hysteria and the howling and the ugliness.
There'll be nothing but lawsuits against Trump
however,
in the next 2 years.
They've already ratcheted it up, and we already have so many lawsuits and so many judges, judicial
investigations,
and judicial activisms. They've already ratcheted it so high that there's only a marginally higher level that they can ratchet it to. And I think that if they do it, they will lose support. I think they're losing support already. I think if they do it, they'll lose support already. So
it could look good for 2020.
We don't want to lose it, but we'll leave it at this for until we get back here. But it's not the utter complete disaster because we'll still hold the Senate.
Okay.
But we'll talk about why we might not lose the House when we come back.
All right. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show with Mike Friedenberg.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment.
Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Let that Christmas bumper music keep playing. Yes, we usher in our Christmas bumper music a month early. It's a tradition on the Bob Siegel Show just to rub it in the nose of the ACLU and all these other organizations to make our Christmases so miserable by acting like they're going to lose their civil liberties if they see a manger scene or a Santa Claus or something. Anyway, you are listening to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM. The Answer, Bob Siegel, with our special guest, National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg. And bit of trivia that those of you who follow the show already know, but if you're new, Mike was one of the very few people over the media who called the election for Donald Trump 2 years ago. People thought he was crazy, and he did it on this show. We don't want him to feel any pressure to call it accurately again for this midterm, but we are going to have him back next week to answer for whatever he predicts. Mike, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob. So as we were, you know, just talking about is that I mentioned that the average that the party with the presidency loses is 37 seats when the president's below 50%. Now, I'm with you. I think that there's 2 or 3 points at least in these polls that are underrepresenting, but I can't prove it. I believe that. But let's just say that, but the media is saying Trump's under 50%. So let's go with that. So if the Republicans were only to lose 24 seats, and history says 37 seats is the standard for an unpopular president, because, you know, Trump is, of course, as according to the mainstream media.
Well, it's about half the country here.
Right,
maybe.
Right. Well, then that would be actually Trump way overperforming and the party overperforming with an unpopular president. So but regardless, if we're talking 23, 24, 26, 27 seats, that is not a wave. It's business as usual. Anything less than that shows that there was a positive factor working in Republicans' favor.
Yeah, I'm reasonably comfortable that we are going to overperform. I'm reasonably comfortable that it won't be a blue wave. I'm not as sure that we won't lose the House. I lean toward thinking we'll keep it, but I'm not sure. But that concerns me more. I mean, it'll be a small consolation to say, well, they didn't have the big wave they thought they would. Okay, for a day or so, okay. But we still have to deal with this horrible Speaker of the House for the next 2 years. They're going to try to impeach Trump. They're not going to succeed, but it's going to dominate the news. It's going to stifle him from doing the things that he really wants to do and that we need him to do.
No, and I agree. We want to keep the House. I'm just saying that it's not maybe the disaster we think it would be. It could really hurt them. And plus, they're going to, once they get control of the House, you know there's a bunch of politicians that are Democrats thinking, I want to keep the House. I want to keep the House. They'll be like the Republicans.
Maybe.
Want to keep
and at You'll least if that. We have the Senate, we can get some judges through.
Well, we'll get the judges through. And the investigations can continue with the Senate Judiciary Committee.
But they're led by the Democrats now. So
no, the Senate will be led by the
Senate. Oh, the Senate Judiciary. Yes.
Okay. So,
well, and frankly, even in the House Judiciary Committee, how many times did we have to listen to Adam Schiff? He was in the minority party. He was on MSNBC every night. So
I'm sure we'll get the same fair coverage as the minor as the minority party as the Democrats did. So let's just take a look here. It's just to set the environment here. Washington Post poll from this Saturday came out. Somebody is Washington Post, no friend of Donald Trump, WAPO, right?
Nope.
Okay. And very interesting stuff. Okay. For just registered voters, it found that the generic congressional poll found voters preferred Democrats over Republicans by 50 to 43%. That's nationwide. But when you get to registered voters, you found that it became a 51 to 44%, still 7 points. Now, 7 points, if you take a look at history, 7 points by no means at a national level poll says anything about a wave. It doesn't even say that they can necessarily pick up 23 to 24 seats. It's marginal at that level. To be confident, they'd really have to be sitting at 10, 11 points to say absolutely positively. So right there, even at a macro level, we're sitting there saying, hey, it's not as slam dunk as they might like to think it is. Now, it's very interesting. In the same poll, Trump's approval is at 44%, with disapproval at 52%. This is the best poll he has had his entire presidency from the Washington Post.
Well,
you can't imagine they weren't happy to see that when they got those results.
Yeah, figured that they stretched it and skewed it as much as they possibly could, and yet even there, it's not sounding
as bad
as they have before.
Now, in the same poll, among registered voters, 71% says the economy is good or excellent. This is up from 60% in August.
Well, okay. And the economy is doing fantastic.
So,
right
I mean,
now.
This is one of the factors that we can take for granted, and it's not it. If you look at how people perform in the past, it is not one that was a 100% excellent predictor of how the party that had the president would do. But it's so good right now that it can't but help Republicans. The status quo is good. Do you want to mess with the status quo? That is in the thinking of the independents out there, where this vote is at, because the Republicans are looking very loyal. Democrats looking very loyal. It's the independents there. So those who give the economy positive ratings, which is a lot, right, favor Republican candidates by 54 to 40%. And that's that in August, that was 49 to 42. So once again, a positive trend. The trend is going the right direction from August to now. That's very good. Now, you alluded to this earlier, which is a very appropriate thing to do, is these are national level polls. And if there's huge numbers in them, like Trump's favorability is at 25% and the generic polls at 20% plus for the Democrats, then you've got a national phenomenon that's going to swamp you. But we're not in those range. So now, since we don't see anything that says national phenomenon that's going to swamp the Republicans, let's get down and look at race by race.
Yeah, because race by race is what's going to determine this.
Right, race by race is going to determine it. So we've been talking about the Senate races here, and let's just take a look at some of the numbers here for favorability here in terms of, let's just take a look at the generic congressional poll in various states where there's competitive Senate races.
Okay, we'll start looking at these Senate races state by state for some of them when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Just 2 days out from a very important election, I want to talk to those of you that are not too brave, who are afraid to admit to your friends that you like Donald Trump. Just look at your wallet. Look at your bank account. And when you go into that voting booth, remember, nobody's watching. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
Okay. So, talking about the Senate races, Morning Consult broke down the states by how each state, not just the national level, how each state is looking on the generic ballot. And it's interesting. Okay. In Arizona, okay, which is a very important race, that's with Martha McSally and Sinema racing there. Right now, some of the polls show the Democrats a little bit ahead. I'm predicting, by the way, McSally wins that race. Absolutely. There's a couple of factors that we'll talk about a little bit later. But
especially since her opponent has insulted Arizona.
Right.
Caught her on tape.
Yeah. So right now it's showing that on the generic congressional ballot, Republicans are 41%, Democrats are 38%. In Florida, Republicans are at 40%, Democrats are at 39%. In Indiana, Republicans are at 42, Democrats are at 36. In Missouri, Republicans 42, 36. Montana, 39, 38. Nevada, Republicans 38, Nevada 40, but within the margin of error.
And Nevada, it's a Republican incumbent.
Right, exactly. Heller, Gene Heller. And then North Dakota, 43% Republican, 33% Democrat. Huge gap. Ohio, competitive state, right? That's one of the bellwether states. 37% Republican, 38% Democrat. Margin of error. Pennsylvania, this is a little bit tougher for us. That's a tough state, but still 37%, 42%, not huge. And then Tennessee, 46, 33, favoring Republicans. West Virginia, 43, 31, favoring Republicans. And then we get to Wisconsin. That's our toughest race here, and I knew it was going to be. Wisconsin, 34% Republicans, 44% Democrats. So, but even those races themselves are still statewide aggregates. Each individual congressional district could be quite a bit different, right? Once you get down there. So, and what one of the characteristics of, and this is a broad generalization, but Republican votes in general on a nationwide level are more concentrated in urban city areas. That, what that means is that more of the districts will have a higher percentage of Democrats in them that are going to be Democrat districts than Republican districts in terms of Republicans being considered Republican districts. In other words, you've got a lot more votes concentrated in smaller numbers of congressional districts. So it's very possible.
Did you say Republicans are more concentrated in urban or Democrats?
No, Democrats are more concentrated in
urban.
Oh,
okay. I thought I heard you say Republican, no. But you meant to say Democrats. Yes. Okay.
Democrats are more concentrated
in
urban.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Right.
Okay. So the point being is that it's very possible in these areas that you're going to have districts that are even better than that for Republicans. And then, of course, districts that are wonderful for the Democrats because they're very Democrat districts. We can't say that. But in general, breaking it down even to the state level, we can just see that in these competitive districts, we're looking good, right? We're ahead there. Now, that's in the Senate. We'll go back to the Senate with specific predictions in a little bit. But what was very interesting is YouGov just released a poll today, a very detailed poll where they did 6,000 calls into the competitive congressional districts and gave you as aggregate results. Very interesting. So now we're getting down from the national level down to the actual 40 or 50 competitive congressional districts that are competitive. So in that district, In those districts, 76% rate the economy as good to very good. 76% in these competitive districts. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit
about... And there were a lot of Democrats who voted for Trump.
Well, there was quite a few.
Forget that. And a lot of independents.
And some of them have re-registered Republicans now, too. But that's... So we may not see that affected. But here's one of the things I want to make a point, is when you're looking at Donald Trump's approval rating, I think that a lot of the people that say I don't approve of him like his policies.
They may not like his personality.
Right. Whereas Obama, now, I never particularly liked the guy, but he got good approval ratings, but everybody hated his policies. And he presided over the massive loss of Democrat state legislatures, the massive loss of, everything. So the question is if people really liked where Trump stands on the economy, and they do, and everything he's done on the immigration issue polls really well.
I think that's what got him elected.
And so, but even right now, every single thing, including sending troops to the border, over 50% support it and only like 42% oppose it.
Well, this caravan that's out to storm our border, right. I think that's helping the Republicans.
So my point is that when you look at this here, so that's very good for these districts. Now, on the generic ballot into these districts, we find we're still at 48% Dem, 45% Republican, a 3-point difference. Almost right within the margin of error of this whole thing. Probably when you get to district, it's well within the margin of error. So, and then one of the questions was asked, will you vote to oppose Trump? 38% yes, they would vote to oppose. 34% said they would vote to support. But once again, that could be skewed by a heavily Democrat urban district changing these numbers. So the numbers aren't crazy. Direction of the country, 45% happy with it, 55% unhappy with it. Those are fantastic numbers. Obama was looking at 30% in those numbers, in the 30s. We're now looking at 45% happy with the direction of the country. That's hard to get. House, and this is a very important question because people will have a tendency to project, well, I'm doing okay, but everybody else must be in trouble. How satisfied are you with things for you and your family? 72% were very satisfied to satisfied.
I would imagine they are, considering that wages have gone up. We have more job openings than people to fill them right now.
Yes. So, as I say, this is a very good, and I found this to be an interesting question here that made me kind of laugh when I saw it. If the Democrats were in control of Congress, do you think their priority would be to, one, work with the president and see if they could get something done, or two, were to impeach him? Only 21, the electorate in this district, only 21% of them thought they would actually work with the president to get something done for the country. The other 72% or something like that said
they would try to impeach him. Blind, deaf, and dumb to think that these Democrats are going to try to work with the president.
Okay, so I don't believe that that's a positive for Democrats on that, but maybe I could be wrong. Maybe so we see that even in the congressional district, as I said, there's too many to go through piece by piece, but there's, you know, some key ones. There's Jonna Salela running against an Hispanic Cuban woman in Florida. And everybody thought it was going to be a slam dunk race. Jonna Salela, a former, Obama official. And right now it looks like the Republican Spanish speaking woman, fantastic candidate, is closing the gap in a district thought to be a Democrat seat. So there's some seats we can watch during the election night.
Okay. More election analysis and projection when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Back to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined by National Review contributor, Mike Friedenberg.
Thanks, Bob. So before we left, we were going to talk a little bit about specific Senate races. So let's just blast through some of these and see what we're looking at here. So Florida. And when we get done with just talking high level who's going to win, we're going to talk about Florida as a bellwether state, a good proxy state to look at for the election night, see how the rest of the country might go. And it's a very important state for Republicans. And we have two important races there. We've got Rick Scott running against Bill Nelson, who's the incumbent senator there. Rick Scott is a very popular governor there. I would call him a moderate conservative, definitely conservative, good guy, and very important state. And then we also have a very important governorship running there. And the reason it's important is because whoever becomes governor will have play a role in the redistricting that's going to be taking place in 2020.
Well, plus one's a conservative and one's an avid socialist.
That's right.
Just
going
to destroy the state of Florida.
But from I'm thinking from the national level, I really want Republicans to charge the redistricting because in 2020, I want a favorable environment for the reelection campaign of President Trump. And having the Republican governor there will help ensure that.
How much control and influence does a governor have over redistricting?
Well, it's good. It's typically can be done by the state legislature. So if he's in control,
but he's got to be able to sign the bill.
He's got to be able to sign the bill, but he also can veto it.
Oh, yeah. So they have quite a bit of influence.
A lot of power. So basically the previous thing said, we were talking about a 1% margin plus margin for generic polls in Florida. Now, beyond that, we've been seeing a lot of early voting coming in. And right now, the Republicans, and this is, let me, stepping back here, when we take a look at the early polling results nationwide, we can look at 2014, and we can look at, which is a midterm, and 2016. What we have here is because the election has been heavily nationalized, Trump has certainly made it nationalized. You know, you've got to support me as my president more than any president recently has done on the Republican side. And the Democrats, of course, it's about let's get rid of Trump. So
this is almost like voting for the reelection of Trump.
So what we're looking at is we're seeing results coming on early ballots that fall somewhere between the 2014 election midterms and the 2016 general. And in the 2014 midterms, Republicans picked up 13 congressional seats. They picked up 9 Senate seats. That was insane.
So the early voting coming in for Republicans is usually indicative of them voting that way on election day.
It shows enthusiasm. And typically the Democrats would beat Republicans on the early walk-in votes by a significant margin, 7 to 8 points. Right now, even after the Saturday surge, the Republicans are still considerably, and you always get a big surge in the last Saturday for the, you know, by the Democrats. The Republicans are still sitting significantly ahead of the Democrats on early walk-in votes. And of course, they're still running about 7 to 8 points ahead of them on absentee votes. So there's two types of votes. So things are looking very good in Florida. And I don't believe that Florida is going to go from a somebody like a Rick Scott to, you know, who is the current governor, to somebody like Andrew Gillum. I just don't believe it. So I'm calling it for both Rick Scott, you know, beating an incumbent's not an easy thing to do, but I think he can do it, and for DeSantis in Florida.
I hope so. DeSantis is a really good man and one of the few congressmen that stood by Trump these last 2 years, too.
So I'm doing that on the basis also of just the early votes showing Republican enthusiasm.
And DeSantis' opponent is certifiable. He's the guy that's doing all these demonization of police. I mean, You name it. It would be a disaster if that guy won.
Okay, so now let's go on to Texas. This is an interesting race. I think it's going to be closer than we wanted it to be. And, you know, there's this Beto O'Rourke has sort of taken on a rock star quality with his base.
But Cruz is still pretty far ahead.
No, he's ahead, but there was one poll that showed within a margin error 3 points. I don't believe it, but I'm saying there's...
Listen, boy, it would be hard to believe Texas going forward. But a lot of ex-Californians now live in Texas.
No, it's been shifted.
They left California because of the bad economy, and now they're trying to turn Texas into a state like California.
But I still believe that Ted Cruz is going to win. But we want to mention, say, is that Ted Cruz, I do like Ted Cruz, but he is not the most effective candidate possible. He just, some people...
People don't like him. He's never bothered me, but he doesn't seem to be likable.
But regardless, I'm still going to give that. So we're going to hold Texas. Missouri, that's, you know, the incumbent there is Claire McCaskill, and we've got Josh Hawley running there. And I'm going to give it, I would say we've got a 50-50 chance of taking that one there. Definitely. I mean, Hawley was up on Claire McCaskill. Listen, step back for a second. If the turnout models that all these gurus are using, if we have a shift of 1 to 2 points, greater turnout for Republicans, their models are no longer accurate. It's a systematic error in the models, and we will see definitely a hole in this house. And if that's the case, we will pick up Missouri. But right now, I can't say that systemic error. The systematic error is there. We're going to lose Wisconsin. I mean, it's an incumbent Baldwin. She's going to win in Wisconsin. Leah Vukmeier is a nice candidate. She can't pick it up. In Arizona, Martha McSally is going to win. There's a number of reasons I believe that. One of them is Doug Ducey is the running for re-election there. He's the governor there. He's running like 20-something points ahead of his opponent, which means that's
telling you what the climate of Arizona is like.
That's also going to help Martha McSally. Having a governor running that far ahead, people coming out to vote for Ducey.
Yeah, probably, and the kind of people that are voting for Ducey, they're going to vote for McSally.
So I'm going to say that gives her a plus there. Dean Heller, I'm saying he's going to hold on. In Nevada. With early voting data, people have been trying to attribute it as a negative for Republicans. I think it actually shows a marginal positive for Republicans. Indiana, Mike Donnelly, despite him voting against, you know, Kavanaugh, and, you know,
right.
He does vote sometimes with Trump, so he can actually talk about some
votes.
Have
you noticed how many of them are trying to claim they're with Trump now? Democrats claiming they're with Trump.
So now,
just to get reelected.
Now, Trump is popular there. So that's one where we could pick up. I give that a 50-50. So Stabenow and John James. I love John James. I just don't think he can do it.
Maybe he'll resurge in a future election.
I mean, he's a great candidate. I mean, he's like the...
he's like another rock star status.
He's fighting up as a well-entrenched incumbent. But he's... You know, we'll see if another poll comes out that shows some positive movement. It's a possibility.
And the factor that you don't see in any of these polls, again, is the Trump rallies. I really think they make a big, big difference. So we're going to see.
So Blackburn, I say, holds the seat in Tennessee. Rosendale's under 50% chance of taking Montana from Tester, but he has a chance.
Okay, we'll look at more of them when we return. Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area. And you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Listeners are enjoying the bumper music. Just got a message from Lynn on Facebook. She says, first Christmas bumper music of the season with an exclamation point and a Christmas tree. And this one is for you, Mike, from Wayne. Great show. Mike Friedenberg makes the complex much easier to understand.
Gosh, make it the obvious obvious, maybe.
Hey,
not,
well, yes.
Well, maybe not the
well,
obvious.
Well, like Obama, I'll say, well, I created the trail for you, and then you picked
exactly.
It up. Yeah.
So we're going to pick up North Dakota. Heidi Hagkamp's going down, so that's good. So, they're pumping a lot of money into West Virginia, so they even feel that Joe Manchin is maybe in trouble. I didn't think he would be, but maybe he is. So if you take a look
at— He's one of the few. He's the only Democrat that voted for Kavanaugh.
Picking up one seat for sure, and then the other four or five seats I've talked about, roughly, you know, give or take 50%, maybe a little better. We're going to pick up one or two of those, assuming that the turnout model stays the same, which just favors the Democrats a bit. If the model turns out to be one or two more points to the Republicans, we could pick up 3 to 4 seats in the Senate.
So you're pretty confident about the Senate.
The Senate.
Any ideas in the time we have left about the
okay,
House?
Okay, so now let's get back to the House here. As I said, you take a look, and a lot of these seats here that are in trouble, if you take a look at a map, you'll see tons and tons of seats. They say lean Democrat, but they're all formerly Republican seats. They're Republican seats, either vacated or a Republican that's in trouble there. The toss-up, most of them are Republican seats. So if you look at the maps there, most of the leaning seats are Republican.
Who's deciding that they lean Democrat?
This is multiple models.
Okay.
You know, this is 538. This is Real Clear Politics. This is people, you know, the Cook Political Report. So they're showing that, you know, in the there's a lot more Republican seats that are leaning Democrat than there are Democrat seats leaning Republican. And there's a lot more toss-ups that are Republican seats than there are Democrat seats. And that's based upon a turnout model that I think factored in, you know, sort of at least a minor way for the Democrats, you know, starting with the special elections, overperforming in the special elections. So and I'm starting to read pieces by pollsters, which they're starting to equivocate.
They're starting to give little disclaimers.
That's the course.
Might not be quite as big as we thought.
Or you know, even if our models are good, but if, you know, if the Republican turnout turns out to be 1% to 2% more, well, then, of course, our model would switch. Now, so they will say, well, if Democrat turns out to be 1% to 2% more, we're not talking 23.
Did they make any adjustments after 2016 when they had all the egg on their face? Have any of these polls changed their methodologies?
They've gotten more sophisticated, but I don't know if a lot of these folks have written very long, sophisticated articles that there's not hidden support for Trump. They're really committed to the idea there's not hidden support
for
Trump.
I think these polls where people don't have to actually talk to somebody, where they can vote on the internet, and I understand the internet has its own share problems. I wonder if they're more reliable. And if these, again, I think these rallies should be some kind of barometer.
I agree with you, Bob. In fact, there's studies that have shown that internet-based polling and automated voice response with no live operator have a tendency not to get more accurate when people are concerned about how their vote might be viewed. And I believe that right now we've never seen such a polarized environment where the average person, it's unpleasant. Not only is the Republican president a racist and a bigot, but everybody that's supporting him is. So,
well, they're thinking, I don't want my tires slashed. Right. I'll vote for Trump, but who needs to know? That's what they're thinking.
Do they really believe the polls are confidential? Because now what's the thing that we see in the media all the time? Major data breaches, right?
Oh,
people stealing data. So
I
think that I personally believe that social desirability bias, i.e. people will say one thing to appear one way and do something other because they're concerned about how they'll be viewed. I mean, in certain circles, people are afraid to say they support Trump because they are. That means that you're supporting a racist, misogynist, a bigot, and maybe you are too. So I still believe that's a factor. So that's one area there. But the other thing is that I don't think they take into account is, first of all, is Trump is barnstorming the country like we've never seen before.
We've never seen a president like him with anything he does.
So
he breaks the mold.
We are seeing early voting, and I have not seen anybody adjusting their models to take into account early voting because a lot of the professional pollsters will tell you early voting doesn't necessarily predict the outcome, and it doesn't. It's not a direct correlation.
Not necessarily, but it sometimes is indicative.
But that's not a direct corollary, but it could be an indirect corollary in the sense that it could show Republican enthusiasm. If it shows Republican enthusiasm, which means a higher overall turnout, then that's one of the major input variables.
Yeah, that is, because when people say, oh, we don't have a chance anyway, I'll just stay home, that's the problem. That's why I think these polls could try to skew the Democrat way to try to discourage Republicans.
It's so like if you take a
hopeless cause.
Take a look at the early voting, Republican enthusiasm, what Donald Trump's doing, the economy, tremendous economy that we have. You take a look at the wackiness of the Democrats and the left. I mean, the mobs, we want jobs, not mobs, that sort of mindset. I think that is not helping the Democrats. I mean, they try to spin it. But people recognize.
And that's saying they're mobs, we're jobs. That's.
And the Kavanaugh thing.
You know, so, I don't like pithy sayings, but I have to admit they work. They
well, the
do
mobs,
work.
Jobs, not mobs is a good saying. I like it.
Well, so, it's very accurate.
It's very accurate. So you throw in the Kavanaugh factor, putting all those things together. Is it possible, at least possible, that all these things together combine to get 1 to 2% better turnout for Republicans? And that now goes into the models. And that goes into the models. We keep the House for sure.
Right.
And so is that and I say, yes, I say it's very possible. So with that said, I will go out on the limb and say, I think we hold the House. As I said, it's harder to be, I had more concrete data with Donald Trump because it was, you know, state by state. This is congressional district, and I don't know the individual candidates, how good they are.
There's too many of them to learn about every
them.
One of them.
So I could just say that I have a feeling I will give a slight edge to holding onto the House barely on this because there really is momentum that says that, you know, the party out and maybe they're not all as crazy as what we see on TV, but there is more Democrat enthusiasm in this midterm than there typically is. But the Republicans have matched it, and Republicans typically do better in midterms. So Republicans are performing better than they do in most midterms, which they normally outperform Democrats in. Well, it's a complex topic, but I'll say that I'm going to say a slight nod to the keeping
and
the
I'm
House.
With you. I'll put my own neck out there, too. I have not studied this scientifically like Mike has, but going with my gut and as much as I've observed, I would say I'm cautiously optimistic that we will take both. I certainly feel better about the Senate than the House, but I'm inclined to think we're going to hold on to both. And that's one of the reasons is that Trump has broken all the odds. And so we'll see. But Mike and I will both be back next week to either celebrate or say, well, God's still on his throne.
Cry in our beers.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.